I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
See, now whenever I hear this bed, this shows how old I am in internet years. I go back to Pachelbel's rant. Anybody watch that? See that video? It's basically how the three chords are just everywhere. It's Pachelbel's canon in D. For those younger people in our audience, or if you just have no idea what the hell I'm talking about, go to YouTube while you're still listening to us, and at some point, look up Pachelbel's rant. Anyway, it's hour two. I'm Rick Camp. He's Arthur Arkish here on The Score. Talked a lot of basketball in the first hour. We are going to switch over to a good amount of baseball talk here, especially in the 7 o'clock hour. We're here with you until 10. And let's go out to the Alpamonte Ford hotline. Alpamonte Ford in Melrose Park. You know the Midway Minute newsletter. I swear I can't speak at all today, which is kind of problematic hosting a radio show. But let's talk with Kevin Kaduk. Follow him on Twitter at Kevin Kaduk. Kevin, how are you doing, man?
Good. What's going on, guys?
Well, there's a lot going on. It is, you know, spring training's really starting up, and especially everything's going on with the Astros and how they're trying to cover up or just get past what's been going on with everybody getting fired, all the cheating, and just get to real baseball. But is there any way for them, at least for the course of this season, to kind of get out of Dodge and do what they want to accomplish? Or is this just going to be hanging over them for a good while now?
I think it's going to be hanging over them. I mean, for probably as long as we can think. I mean, this has really been like such a huge controversy. And if all publicity is, good publicity, I kind of feel like this is great for baseball because we're actually talking about baseball. And another thing is there's actually a bad guy in baseball. And I think, we had the evil empire for so long at the turn of the century and probably really the first 10 years of the century. And that was such a great thing. Everyone was rooting against the Yankees. This year, everyone's going to be rooting against the Astros. I mean, even if they play the Yankees, people are going to be rooting for the Yankees. You're seeing people on Twitter saying, okay, we're going to go out and we are going to boo the Astros at every single game. People are already planning on going to Dodgers fans are planning on going down to the opening series at Angel Stadium and booing that. So in a weird way, I think it's great for baseball because you look at, like, this week, that's all anyone's been talking about. And when's the last time that all anyone has been talking about is baseball?
That's a good point, Kevin. I hadn't thought about that angle. I was driving to the studio and kind of considering how maybe the Yankees aren't the biggest villains anymore. As you just mentioned, there's a new bad guy in town to root against, so that makes a bunch of sense. And maybe this is good for baseball. That makes sense, too, but not a good look for Jim Crane and some of the others who really just don't know a whole lot about contrition, apparently, or just weren't interested in conveying any of it. Just your thoughts on how bungled that was yesterday and where it kind of leaves this management team.
You know, it's so crazy that they went from the darlings who turned it around from 2014 and were on the cover of Sports Illustrated, predicted to win the series in 2017 by Ben Ryder, and that actually happens, and everyone thinks it's such a great story, and it's their first World Series, and I think even people in Chicago were happy for them, at least White Sox fans. Oh, we beat them in 2005, and now they finally got theirs, all well and good. And now, just 3 years later, it's just completely different. You know, obviously a lot of people paid the price. A lot of people were thrown under the bus, but there's still a lot of people there. And as more and more details are coming out, that how well known this was, it's just really hard. And even you look at the White Sox camp yesterday, Dallas Keuchel came out and I didn't think he acquitted himself very well either, but it's something that these guys, from Dallas Keuchel to Justin Verlander to Jose Altuve, those guys are going to wear that probably forever. I mean, you know, the state of steroids hasn't gone away from that entire generation of players. So I can't imagine that everyone's just going to sweep this under the rug. Now, maybe had they not won the World Series, it'd be a completely different story. But once you win the World Series, you see those home road splits. You know, it's going to be hard for people to forget that. I don't think people should.
What do you think in terms of how do you feel about self-policing in baseball? And is that, how much is that going to elevate this season with some of these Astros hitters and the targets that they're going to have on their backs? And it seems to me that that's a combustible situation that could get out of control pretty quick, too.
That's interesting. When you first said self-policing, I thought you were talking, you know, referring to Mike Fears and the clubhouse code of silence or whatever that was broken.
We can go there, too.
That's a whole other story.
Yeah,
that would be interesting to see because you roll into a different town with a different team. Obviously, the Yankees are going to have it out for you pretty bad. I can't say that I know that if the Dodgers are on our schedule or not. But obviously, I don't know if you saw Cody Bellinger, but he was really talked without a filter, which is not something you usually see from baseball players. He's very upset. So it's going to be interesting. Obviously, any team is looking for an edge. Whether or not any of the other 29 teams went to something like this, only they know. I mean, who knows what could come out. But right now, the Astros are the only ones wearing the scarlet letter.
And to be clear, I mean, Kevin, this has been going on for as long as we know about as far as stealing signs, runner on second base, catchers being lazy with a single, you know, a single sign. And that, I think, is, you know, all bets are off. And every team is should kind of try and make their own breaks in that regard. Do you agree with that? I mean, I know this is, you know, cheating in baseball goes back and back and back. But I just I have to assume it is the level to which this was orchestrated and all, as you mentioned, the details that just continue to come out. That's what has everyone so frustrated and much worse even regarding the situation.
Yeah, I mean, no question. I think everyone has the opinion, okay, if you can do it with gamesmanship and if people aren't hiding their signs and you do it through a level of just kind of being smart about it and using what you have available. But now when you bring in, you know, cameras and all the different other systems where that is expressly prohibited by the rules, there's no gray area there. That's where it makes a difference. But you're right. You go back to even shot heard around the world. You know, there was allegations, maybe even proven of sign stealing there. Things have popped up here and there. Even I think recently in Toronto, maybe to, you know, like 7 or 8 years ago. But something like this that just had the complete, you know, cover blown off of it, completely different story. And I think that's, you know, when you definitely know what's coming and you have a system to actually tell people what is coming and there's no doubt about it, completely different story.
We're speaking with Kevin Kaduk here on The Score. Follow him on Twitter at Kevin Kaduk and make sure to subscribe to the Midway Minute newsletter. And one of the things that normally is not something that fascinates me is in really many situations is the lawsuits that are going on. But the fact that Mike Bolsinger suing for, you know, lost in theory, would it be lost wages? And it's so hard for me to figure out how you prove that necessarily considering, you know, you look at, okay, it's an isolated incident, but it doesn't rule out the fact that he could have just kind of sucked as well. Like, it certainly didn't help. So what do you have any inkling of what you think will come of him or any other player that decides to sue for this as well?
Well, they have an algorithm for everything else in baseball. Couldn't they design one for this?
It's the one the Astros want to bury.
Yeah, I have no idea how you litigate that. I don't think anything will come of that. But it is interesting. And obviously, there's any number of, you know, opportune parties that would want to come up and try to make a buck off of this. You know, even probably I wouldn't be surprised if we saw a class action from season ticket holders of the Dodgers or something. I actually saw somebody on Twitter saying that Ben Ryder, the writer of Astro Ball, people were tweeting at him saying they wanted refunds for the book that he reported about the Astros, which is a whole different story. So glad I'm not in Ben's shoes.
Kevin, what do you think about Dusty as the guy who's been tasked with trying to you know, limit the well, I don't even know if that's the right way to put this, to just try and allow the Astros to, you know, kind of function as normal as possible in light of what a crazy situation this is. I'm guessing that fans here in Chicago probably have some, I don't know, varied opinions of Dusty being the guy, although my understanding is he was, I think the hire was praised pretty universally given everything that he has seen and kind of the experience that he brings to this unique situation.
There's no question that he's somewhat of a bulletproof vest that was brought down in there. I think maybe Jim Crane thought they could bring someone who is so liked by the media. I mean, people like Dusty Baker. You can talk about whatever happened in 2003 and Mark Pryor and Kerry Wood's careers. But, you know, at the end of the day, Dusty is a good man, a good baseball man. And I think they saw he was just somebody that, you know, could kind of come in and calm things down. I don't know if he really wants the headache that's coming. I'm not sure he knows the headache that was coming after seeing what happened yesterday. I almost kind of feel bad for him. I don't know if it's worth the paycheck. I know he really wants that World Series ring. People kind of say that he needs that World Series ring to get in the Hall of Fame, which is probably true, but you actually look at where he's on the career managing wins list. I think it's like 15th, and the 14 guys in front of him, I think 13 are in the Hall of Fame, the exception being Gene Mock. So he's a guy that deserves it and has been around and is a good baseball guy. But, yeah, I think he wants that World Series championship, and here's an opportunity, and he's getting up in years, and I guess he had to take it. But yeah, it's going to be a roller coaster ride from start to finish.
We're chatting with Kevin Kaduk. You guys know him, the creator of Yahoo's Big League Stew. He was at Yahoo forever. He just launched a new independent newsletter called the Midway Minute. Make sure you go sign up for that. Great stuff. Kevin has written in recent days about Mark Grace joining the Marquee Network. Actually did some basketball, too, that maybe we'll be able to get to in a minute here. But I just want to ask you, obviously this cheating scandal is dominating the MLB headlines, but what would we be talking about nationally right now if everything was kind of ho-hum with the Astros? What one or two stories kind of intrigue you the most as spring training heats up?
To me, just kind of looking, you know, I wrote earlier about Pakota coming out and just looking at how stacked the American League is and how relatively thin the National League is, especially the National League West. You know, Dodgers are obviously projected to run away with it, win it by 24, 25 games, which is crazy. And the bottom of that division is just so bad. And it's really creating a scenario where the Cubs right now are projected for like 84 wins. And to get into the playoffs. And so there's a really a soft lower, you know, to middle there. And then you go over to the American League where the White Sox are kind of projected right now to win the same amount of games, but they've got to jump over, you know, four or five other teams to kind of get in contention. So to me that's really, you know, what we're looking at. I think it's going to be a great season. I think people are, like I said, people are talking about the game, which I think is good because that necessarily hasn't been the case, especially on Valentine's Day.
Kevin, I'm intrigued by the three-batter minimum, and I guess until we really get into regular season games, we won't quite know exactly what the ramifications of it are going to be. But considering, I guess I understand the whole game length thing and all that, but just from a strategy standpoint, I'm pretty fascinated by it. Have you seen any changes in terms of how bullpens are constructed, the types of guys that are in pens to this point, that it's making some sort of tangible difference even before you really see it on the diamond?
Yeah, I can't say that I have. I'll be interested to see how it works in spring training. I think everyone's looking towards that. But, you know, in a sport that's so reliant on numbers and projections and forecast of data that were based on past seasons, they have nothing to go on that. Now, from a fan standpoint, I think it's going to be agonizing. You go into, you know, you get in there and, oh, this guy doesn't have it or whatever, or he gets blown up by, you know, the first batter, and you think, oh, God, now he's got to get, you know, two more. I think that's going to be rough from that standpoint, but I think it's going to be a little while before, you know, the managers and general managers and then all the analytic people get a handle on it.
Kevin, before we let you go, are you drinking the White Sox Kool-Aid? They've had an explosive offseason. This has been obviously a welcome change for that fan base. And got a lot of talent all of a sudden. How long do you think it takes to put that together and for them to be in contention?
I think it's going to be interesting because is this going to be a 2015 where, okay, they kind of come out, you know, like 2015 Cubs, where they come out slow, and then really turn it on in the second half and all gel together. I don't know. My perception is maybe the pitching staff isn't completely there yet. You still need a lot of things to come together on that front. But just from a White Sox fan perspective, it's just been such a drag and no reason to tune in every day. And now you've got guys to watch on every single position in the field, basically. And a lot of young guys and a lot of fun guys to watch. A lot of guys with big personalities. I was going through White Sox GIFs the other day, and just Eloy Jimenez GIFs coming up. It's like, what a great character to have coming up. And I really think that that's what the South Side needs, and I think that's what baseball needs. You look at like Zion Williamson going through with Barack Obama today and dapping out. It's like Eloy Jimenez is that same guy in baseball. So I think it's going to be fun to watch. Do I think they're going to win 95 games? No, but high-end 87, 88 games, if all things go right, I think White Sox fans will be happy with that. And even if they move past 80 wins, which they haven't done since 2012, I think is a success as long as they're building towards this, 4 or 5 year crescendo.
Very good. Yeah, it does seem to be trending upward. And Kevin, we really appreciate your time. We're going to let you go. We know it's Valentine's Day. You probably have big plans. Before we do, though, just tell the listeners about this Midway Minute newsletter and where they can find it and what they'll receive if they do sign up.
Sure. Well, the elevator pitch is 5 Chicago sports teams, 1 Chicago sports newsletter. You can sign up for it at themidwayminute.com, and we'll take you right there. It's free to sign up right now, and every morning you just get a little email with a little column by me, and then, more importantly, linking you out to some of the best work in Chicago, regardless of outlets. And I also get an old scoreboard in there, too. So it's a lot of fun. I've gotten good feedback on it, and I appreciate you guys having me on to publicize it.
Absolutely, Kevin. Really appreciate your time, man.
All right. Take it easy, guys. Happy Valentine's Day.
Thanks, Kevin. Have a great night.
That is Kevin Kaduk. And really, when you look at how a lot of people consume media right now, having someone that's essentially willing to just cut out a lot of what would probably be considered fluff and give you the best stuff of the day, that saving you time is absolutely worthwhile. So that is a newsletter that you should be signing up for sure.
Yeah, it's sweet. I signed up today. I know the newsletter is hot too in the industry. I know my digital editors are all over it, and we wish Kevin the very best. It was great to have him on the show and talk a little baseball. He's a good dude. We're all West Suburbanites too, so we're able to get together on that front as
That's
well.
That's true. It's rare to get a bunch of, because it seems like a vast majority of people that are around here live in the city, which is just logical because it's much closer, or they're in like north or southern burbs. I work with Jay Zawoski every day. He's he's down in Homewood, or you have right. a bunch of people that live up north. But to have people that represent the western burbs, there's not enough of us around here. I don't know.
The only downside is when you're showing up late and you're supposed to be on the radio. Did I say that? You did such a great job of covering, and here I am blowing my cover.
That's fine. 290's not great. That's breaking news. I know we do traffic. I don't want to steal Julie's job here, but yeah, not so much. But either way, we're gonna take time out, come back, and then both sides of town have some intriguing storylines as we're starting up spring training. So we'll come back and talk about Chris Bryant, talk about what the White Sox are doing right now. So he's Arthur Arkish. I'm Rick Camp. We're here with you till 10 on The Score. The bottom of the hour is brought to you by Northwestern Basketball. Join Northwestern Basketball at the new Welsh Ryan Arena this season. Remaining home opponents include Illinois, Penn State, and Minnesota. Single game tickets to see Chicago's Big Ten team are on sale now at nusports.com. We're going to get some baseball conversation. However, we're looking up at the celebrity game, which is going on right now. I understand the coaches are Stephen A. and Mike Wilbon. I know Mike Wilbon's from the area, whatever. Get the Blackhawks sweater off at the NBA All-Star game, man. We get it. Chicago area guy, representing all the teams here, whatever. Get your Blackhawks sweater off at the NBA All-Star game. I mean, do I truly care that much? No. It just seems very out of place. Is that just me?
No, I think we should rail on him a little bit too.
Just in general.
No, it does appear to be a little bit contrived, I'll say that. Yeah. But Hey, teach their own. I was just saying off air. I believe the Chicagoan Wilbon is spelling Trubisky with an I at the end, and there have been some pretty strange Bears tweets during the season too.
That's very true.
I don't know what that's all about.
I'm Rick Camp. He's Arthur Arkush. We're here with you until 10 o'clock, and we're gonna get to the baseball, like I said. But Alex and Joliet has been holding for quite a while, so I want to give him his time. Alex, you're on the score.
Appreciate the do, fellas. Evening. Happy holiday.
You too.
You too, man. Thanks for
waiting. You don't sound very sold on that, though.
No, happy is a clam. Other than you had to come back home to Joliet. I was actually in the first take line, and it was so cold, I gave my tickets away and went home.
So you weren't yelling fire Garpax?
Well,
maybe internally?
Yeah, there's got to be changes, and I love the theming of the All-Star Weekend where we're framing the 90s, and it's been the 80s with the Jordan, the Dunk.
Since the new year started. Since the new year, I believe the Bulls are down to 23rd in defensive rating when they were top 10 most of the 2019 part of this season. And part of it's because with the injuries, when you lose your nimble guys, your nimble bigs in terms of Wendell Carter and Daniel Gafford, when you want to blitz, pick, and roll, so have your big guy go out there and really force the point guard to make a decision, he has to be able to get his ass back to the basket and to his own guy. When you have 7'2 Luke Kornet, who's big and slow and doesn't move well, and stumbly Chris Felicio, who just isn't good, it's really problematic to still run that same system. Like, Luke Kornet had some success in a different style of system where he more or less got to park his ass by the basket and be tall, which is something he's good at. But not being willing to even... I understand wanting to have a style of play that you have as your bread and butter. But when those guys are out and the fact that you're not willing to adjust at all, that's a recipe for disaster in a lot of circumstances, and especially when you don't have the same amount of talent. And that's kind of where the Bulls are, especially considering they've played a pretty easy schedule.
Yep.
After really starting in the next couple weeks, like the last 15 to 20 games, they have a brutal schedule. Like they've played 23 games this year against teams over 500. They have won one of them. And that one game was against the Clippers when Kawhi didn't play. Patrick Beverley didn't play. Lou Williams didn't play. So three of their probably closing five guys or six top guys weren't playing.
Wait, so maybe this isn't rock bottom still is what I'm hearing.
Maybe, maybe not. But at 312-644-6767, Kevin's in Homewood, and Kevin may think it is.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call, and I'm trying to do the husbandly duty of getting flowers. So if you hear beeps, it's because I'm at the store getting roses.
Like a 7-Eleven or like a real flower shop?
Let's say a step above 7-Eleven. How about that?
Walmart. Gotcha.
But no, I wanted to say here is that, I've been a diehard Bulls fan my whole life, really to the point where I was at the ring ceremony the night in 99, first game after the championship era, and I thought that was rock bottom. You didn't expect a lot from that team, but now in the last few years, the expectations came back with the Thibodeau era, and the talent is there, but the management is not. And I'm at the point with a five-year-old, I'm not willing to put the money into the team to go to these games because it's so expensive, and that seems to be the only thing that matters now is the dollar amount that comes back to the team. And I'm a Lion Bulls fan now because of that. So it's really hard to invest in this. And it's just, for that matter, they'd have to make some really big changes for me to want to spend money as a fan. So that's my point. I hope they can make the changes.
All right, Kevin, really appreciate it. Go Roses if you can. That's always a safe bet.
Obviously, like at a Jewel or something, right?
Yeah.
CVS?
Yeah. Yes.
I'd say a Jewel because they have like the walk-in place for the flowers. You know, you can get like a bouquet of roses right there.
Yeah, that's true. Chris Dickens, Brandon Orlowski on the other side of the glass. And I think Kevin is definitely not alone because we read off the attendance numbers before. And the thing is, too, it doesn't help the Bulls that the best team in basketball right now, or at least the best regular season team in basketball, is only 90 miles north. The Milwaukee Bucks are incredible. They're, even when Giannis is out, the few games he's been out, doesn't really matter. They've lost one game when he's out, which is pretty crazy at this point. And I've been to their new stadium. It's really nice. They play a fun style of basketball. It's one of the three best players in the league right now that's up there. And even though it's Milwaukee, it's an easy drive, especially if you're going to plunk down the money to go to an NBA game. The drive is worth it, and you get to see a better product. So there's a lot of things working against the Bulls right now. I think we're finally getting the perfect storm that everybody's been wanting to force change.
Well, you sold me. I want to go see this new the new court in Milwaukee. I've been to Miller Park, of course, to go watch Cubs Brewers, and that's always a blast. And it kind of it's in the back of my head because we're talking about how the team in Milwaukee, the NBA team, is so good, and obviously this plucky Brewers team hasn't made life super fun for the Cubs the past couple of years either.
Sure.
So Milwaukee's kind of got our number at the moment. But yeah, no, it was a good call. I'm glad that Kevin, I believe it was, is finding smarter ways to invest his money, especially on Valentine's Day.
Very true.
Go get those flowers. That's the glasses half full. You don't want to spend money on the Bulls. At least you can take care of more important things and fulfill your husband responsibilities. So that's a job well done, Kevin.
Ken's in Schaumburg, and Ken's on the score.
Yes. You there?
Hey.
Yes.
Thanks for calling.
Hi, guys. Thanks for taking my call. First of all, Valentine's Day garbage. Let's all be honest here. You know, it's not something you want to do ever.
Okay.
Listen, I'm wondering, you know, like listening to Anthony Davis say that Chicago is the mecca of basketball. He's quoted as saying this, correct?
Yeah, he wasn't talking about professionally. He was saying in terms of where talent comes from.
That's where talent comes from, correct? Yes. So where's the disconnect here? Where, you know, where we can't harness, you know, this in our colleges and in our professional team, is it the coaching? Is it the front office? You know, I tend to believe it's more so. I'm not even like a big Bulls fan. I grew up watching the '90s Bulls. I loved it, you know, but I can't watch it now. It's garbage.
All right, thanks for the call, Ken. Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to make connections to the Chicago college basketball teams because, quite frankly, I don't care about college basketball, really. College basketball is a rough watch. But I am a snooty NBA fan in that way. If I watch so much NBA basketball, college basketball is a rough watch.
Well, I get where he's coming from, though.
Oh, 100%.
Because it's very infuriating as a Illinois college basketball fan in general, just a fan of any team in Illinois, that the recruiting for kids in Illinois is so down. You do not get local talent, and it's the truth. I mean, we have some of the best high school basketball players in the country, and you're not getting anything into those programs. And then at the same thing at the professional level, people who grew up in Chicago don't want to play for an organization. So it's infuriating as a Illinois basketball fan in general.
309, it's Peoria Matt texting in. Good question. Where do you think he's hiding the bodies? I'm going to go with the crawl space. That guy seemed a little off, so maybe he goes, you know, thinking they'll look below ground. Maybe he goes a little bit above. I don't know. Maybe the attic.
He's got a freezer.
That's true. At the bottom of the hour is brought to you by Northwestern Basketball. I'm sure they're proud of that. Join Northwestern Basketball at the new Welsh Ryan Arena this season. Remaining home opponents include Illinois, Penn State, and Minnesota. Single game tickets to see Chicago's Big Ten team are on sale now at NUSports.com. Let's take a time out and come back. And I had a conversation earlier in the day with John Hollinger from The Athletic, and I think it dovetails really well with what we're talking about right now about building a front office, building an organization, where the Bulls stand, and just the status of the NBA as we head into the unofficial second half, even though it's like the 60% of the season's over. So when we come back, we'll hear that. He's Arthur Arkush. I'm Rick Camp. We're here with you until 10 o'clock on The Score. This segment's brought to you by the all-new Super Duper Slam, just $6.99 at Denny's. They're playing to the audience right here. Introducing the Denny's Super Duper Slam with bacon sausage, egg, hash browns, and all-you-can-eat pancakes for just $6.99. The deal is so super, we just had to add a duper for a limited time. Price may vary. See you at Denny's. He's Arthur Arkish. I'm Rick Camp. We're here with you until 10 o'clock on The Score. So earlier today, I had the opportunity to speak with John Hollinger, who's a senior NBA analyst at The Athletic. And he just got out of the Memphis Grizzlies front office where he was for the last 8 years. His media stuff before doing that at ESPN was so good. He's the creator of PER. And he has the Hollinger and Duncan podcast, which focuses a lot on front office stuff. So it seemed like a perfect time to talk with him. So the conversation started with me asking him, what's the biggest misconception there is between what fans think and what actually happens in a front office?
You can't really operate it like you operate your fantasy team, I guess. It's not just about trading so-and-so and drafting so-and-so. There's so much that goes into that in terms of coaching and player development and the medical staff and the other people you have all around your team, and it's managing that whole aspect of it, because a lot of that determines, you know, what ROI you're going to get from any of your player transactions.
So if I were to put you in the position of, for sake of argument, Seattle gets an expansion team and everybody's happy because there's a team back in Seattle, and you were put in charge of building the basketball ops portion, what's most important to you when you think about building a properly run front office?
There's a lot of important people decisions that need to be made. It's hard to say which of those is the single most important, right? But you need the scouting infrastructure, the medical infrastructure, and the player development infrastructure. And you need all three of those things to be good. You need to select good players, need to have them upright and available for the games, and you need to have the staff who can get the most out of those players to have them achieve their potential. So it's really three completely different prongs. And so to say which of those is more important than the others is difficult. And then obviously, you know, there's stuff that goes deeper than that. You still have to make the right choices on personnel and draft and trades and all that, and select the right coach. And that's why it's hard, though.
Who are some of the franchises that you point to as model franchises in the league at this point?
Well, I mean, certainly the Spurs of the last two decades who have been, you know, sort of, I mean, their whole up and down the organization has been picked clean by other franchises trying to emulate the model of success that they had. I think you start there, definitely. I think there are other franchises that have enough of a history of sustained success, whether you look at like a Boston or a Miami or a Utah, where certainly teams in the league look at that and think they can emulate that. And then I think even in the last couple of years, there are a couple other organizations, you know, Toronto Raptors, obviously have become just absolutely first rate across the board. And I think the LA Clippers in the last couple of years have really changed their stripes too.
One of the pillars you brought up was player development. And I guess looking at it from more of a Chicago angle, it's been something that the Bulls have struggled with when they get, you know, when they even get guys that seem to be really promising into their fold. What do you look for and how do you build the proper player development structure? Because I think that's something that a lot of us just don't have that great of a concept of.
Yeah. And, you know, I'm not sure I'm the perfect guy to be asking either, to be honest, but it's something that a lot of franchises struggle with, is what does that entail and who are the right people to oversee and execute that, and how do you measure that? And, you know, obviously there are other elements now in the league that you didn't have in terms of the G League franchise. Now, you know, the Bulls now, they have the Windy City Bulls to potentially, you know, have guys play for if they're not getting minutes with the main franchise. Although the last couple of years, that hasn't been as much of an issue because there's been, you know, not as stiff competition maybe for game minutes with the varsity.
Yeah, there's plenty of minutes available if you want them.
Yeah, yeah. And but you know, there's a little of a chicken and egg question too, obviously, of like, you know, when a player doesn't work out, what was it? Right? Was it that you selected somebody who wasn't good enough, or was it that you didn't get the most out of that player you selected, or was it some combination of the two? And it's hard to know with 100% certainty. So that, you know, that's where it gets a little tricky, where the art meets the science, I should say, because quantitatively you'll never know. You know what I mean?
Absolutely, because when you bring that up, the name that pops to my mind, and probably not surprisingly in Chicago, is Lauri Markkanen, because of how promising he looked his rookie year and how he's seemingly regressed. But then there's so many elements that go into it where it's not sure if Jim Boylan or Chris Fleming, whoever's truly in charge of that offense, is putting Markkanen in best positions for him to succeed and get to his spots versus actual player development versus just what's in him. Because I know there's plenty of times where Bulls observers are like, if he would just get more aggressive and demand the ball, that could probably put him in a better position to score or just to put himself in a better place within the offense. That it's just something frustrating that, like you mentioned, I don't know how easy that is to be able to determine on any level of the organization.
Yeah. And then, you know, I think there's a physical question you can ask there too, because you wonder if he was diminished at the start of this year before he went out with mm-hmm. that pelvic stress fracture, I believe it was.
Yeah.
So, I think that's a question you can ask as well. And that's an important part of it too, you know, having the right strength coaches and the right people in charge of that program that, you know, can have the players' bodies in peak condition. I think that's, you know, that's an area where I think the Bulls have had some issues in their past.
I feel like this past offseason, a lot of Bulls fans were kind of doing the gif of Joey from Friends looking through the rain window that he has at New Orleans, and how David Griffin built up that front office and, you know, mm-hmm. stealing a lot of the training staff from Phoenix and being able to put that in place of just, because the Bulls have had their issues. Everybody knows, you know, the Luol Deng stuff with the spinal tap, and there's been other issues since then. I guess on the whole, what is the outward perception of the Chicago Bulls?
You know, certainly that they're in a bit of a rut. I think nobody denies that. I think, you know, it's interesting because this same group built that team with, you know, with really several good draft picks and hiring Thibodeau and really had a tremendous run, you know, late picks on Mirotić and Jimmy Butler, and kind of lost their way a little bit since then. And it's almost a little as an observer from the outside, it's a little mystified, you know, with stretch of being hot at the poker table and then cold, and the reality is somewhere in between, or something changed there, or what, you know, what happened, right?
Yeah.
I mean, this is the same group that, you know, they built that whole team with Noah and Rose and all those guys.
Yeah, it's really interesting. It does seem like some of it changed when John Paxson tried to take the step back and put Gar Foreman to the forefront. Just not trying to necessarily get anybody fired or put you in that position too, but got John Hollinger with me on The Score. He's the senior NBA columnist from The Athletic, the Hollinger and Duncan podcast as well. Really great resource for those that want to go inside the NBA and especially the front office aspects of it. Follow John on Twitter at John Hollinger. He's the former VP of basketball operations for the Memphis Grizzlies. Who are some of the names of up-and-coming executives that you think would be in line for whatever the next top guy in basketball ops would be?
You mean like who would be some candidates if an opening were to materialize?
Yes.
I would say probably the two of the top guys you would think of would be Bobby Webster in Toronto and Michael Zarin in Boston, both of whom have been in their positions long, you know, for a long time to accumulate a lot of experience, but still, you know, haven't gotten their turn yet to run their own franchise, but have won championships and been, you know, been a big parts of teams that won championships. So I think those are names that would probably be at the top of the list. You know, I'm circling through my brain here a little bit. You know, like Justin Zanuck in Utah is like technically the GM there, but Dennis Lindsay is kind of overseeing as the president. So I don't know if he'd even be available or not, but he'd certainly be a name that would be out there. So I'd say just off the top of my head, those are a couple that I would think of.
All right, let's get to this season and what's been going on so far. I'm just really intrigued at how a lot of things have transpired so far. How many teams do you think realistically can win the title at this point?
Some nights you look and you say one when you watch the Milwaukee Bucks play. because they've been, I mean, they've been just lights out awesome. They're having a historic season. So I think you have to start there. And I think people would be viewing them differently, I think, if they were in, you know, maybe in a larger market. Because, I mean, they've been awesome. They've been the class of the league, and it's not even close. Now, having said that, they're not a defending champion, right? So mm-hmm. I think it's going to be always a little bit of a question until you get one with them. So I think then you look at Toronto, who won last year, even though they don't have Kawhi Leonard for this go-around. I think you look at the two teams in L.A., the Clippers and the Lakers, sort of the presumptive Western Conference finals right now. We'll see if that comes to pass. But I think they're the other two teams that are really at the top of your list. And then you get into more kind of, you know, the wild cards, you know, Boston, but do they have enough size? Philadelphia, I think everyone is scared of how talented they are, doesn't want to be the team that faces them in the playoffs, but they haven't been able to get out of their own way on some nights either. And then I think Houston is another team that's going to be really tricky for teams to match up against in the playoffs with the way they play. But can they do that successfully four times in a row in a postseason? I'm not sure.
Toronto's been fascinating just coming off of the 15-game win streak that they had. Two-parter of just how good has Nick Nurse been as their coach, especially this year without having Kawhi? And where I worry about them is maybe down the stretch of playoff games. Would they just run everything through Pascal Siakam, or would they maybe be a team, and I think of, you know, the beautiful game Spurs against the Heat, where it's literally just going to be wherever the offense takes the ball on a given possession?
I think it's going to be a little more of the latter for them, but I do think offensively it is a question. You know, do they really have enough there to score against good defenses that are locked into what they're doing? They get, I will say, their end-to-end speed is a really underrated way of how they play and how they're effective, because they're able to get early, quick shots a lot of times, or just get teams unsettled and into mismatches. But that's a harder thing to do in the postseason, too. It tends to slow down. I will say this. I mean, I think Nick Nurse should probably win Coach of the Year. He's done a tremendous job with that team. Has been really creative in terms of coming up with different defenses and different looks to throw at teams, different options late in games. So I think he's absolutely maximized what he has on the floor there.
One more before I let you go, and I really appreciate your time. Being one of the godfathers of analytics, what's one of the next frontiers that you think is being looked at right now that maybe a lot of the more casual observers aren't paying close enough attention to yet?
So I would say the one place where analytics has really taken off has been on the frontier of trying to keep guys healthy. You know, we have all these cameras, all these wearable devices now, and teams are just trying to figure out what to do with all this information and all this data they can collect from it, and how they can use it to maximize player health and do things like calibrate. When do we need to sit a guy out on a back-to-back? You know, when is the injury risk too great? You know, I think we've seen some of that with players, with teams choosing to optionally rest players for games. But I think that's one that is still done more by feel than by, you know, scientific kind of information. And I think teams are getting to the point where they can make those decisions more based on the information in the analytics from those types of devices, rather than just kind of going by feel.
John, I really appreciate your time. I wish the weather was better for you this weekend.
At least it's not raining.
That's true. At least an optimistic view from John Hollinger. Although, if you follow him at John Hollinger, lots of complaining about the weather here. But, you know, he was in Memphis, and then I believe he lives in Atlanta now. But anyway, we're going to switch gears, coming to the top of the hour here. Kevin Kaduk, you probably know him more from Yahoo right now, doing his own newsletter, the Midway Minute newsletter. There's a lot going on in the baseball world, which is a lot of his expertise, but he can kind of spray to all fields. So we'll talk with him next. He's Arthur Arkershimer at Camp, and this is The Score.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.